That's really, did you ask them why they used the term, or are they just?
I asked them about blocking. Yeah.
It's just not the cool.
It's interesting. It's funny. I was just speaking with my in-laws. They said they actually mentioned that same story just today. That's really cool. Yeah.
It would appear among non-Orthodox Jews in the United States, glot is like a term for like extra specialty kosher.
Yeah, right. Because people don't really know what it.
I've often asked words kosher, oh, there's a glot pizza store.
Right, right. So I mentioned like glot usually means it means smooth. So does that mean what they actually put their hands all over the pizza? You know. No sirchot here, huh? Glot spices.
Wow.
Okay, so here we go. Just to quickly recap. So we mentioned that Rav Huna said nishkata harehi becheskas heta, that when you shech the cow or any kosher animal, the assumption is that the shochet, if he's an expert, he knows what he's doing, he did it right. And there's an assumption that animals are typically healthy. So that means that when you shech an animal, we don't assume that anything went wrong in the shechita. We don't assume anything went wrong in terms of the trefos. And even though there are 18 simoni trefa brought down in the Mishnah and Chulin, we don't really have to check for them. Nonetheless, Rashi in Maseches Chulin and Daf Yud Aleph and other Rishonim also bring down that with reyot, with regard to the lungs, there apparently is some re'usa. There's some concern that there's a miut hamotzoi. There's an unusually large minority of events where the reyot, where the lungs, have some problems with them. And therefore, says Rashi, there's a chiyuv to check. And the Shach explains that chiyuv to check is just a chiyuv d'rabbanon l'chatchilo. Really, the din of Rav Huna is still there. Nishchata harehi b'cheskas heter. But since the rabbanon made this takana that you have to check, we have to check. Even though it's a chiyuv d'rabbanon l'chatchilo, you got to do it. If b'dieved a dog ran away with the lungs, so that would be something else. So you can't do anything about it. So we'd be mekel. At least you can talk about being mekel. But l'chatchila got to check. The Beis Yosef, the Machaber, writes in the Shulchan Aruch that if a person doesn't check on purpose, they ignore the din. So he uses the phrase brought down in the Gemara, v'ishachenu nachash, which means that the snake should bite him, which basically is a generic term for people who blatantly ignore chiyuve derabanan lechatchila. People who ignore them, so Chazal say that person should be punished. So now that we're checking, so what's going to happen? What are we looking for? So we mentioned that there was a debate ultimately between the Mechaber and the Ramah. The Mechaber says that there are two, he points out there are two different types of adhesion, sirchot. So those adhesions that are consecutive, you know, they're right next to each other, from one lobe next to the adjacent lobe, from lobe 1 to lobe 2, or from lobe 2 to lobe 3, so we said that's okay. There's no problem, you don't have to check, everything's great, you can eat it. But, according to the Mechaber, if the sirchot are out of order, the shalokisidron, from 1 to 3, so then, leslahu takana, and it's a problem, and you have to throw it out. And if you do miuch, if you rub it away, and you're going to feed it to people, so that's considered like being ki'ilu machil treifos liyisrael. Very machmir. The Ramah is mekel and machmir. The Ramah says that if the sirchot are kesidron, if they're in order, so we don't just say it's fine. You got to check. Okay, you have to do some more investigation. But if they're out of order, even if they're out of order, there is some way to fix it, and that's called miuch. That was a minhag in Poland where they would rub away these adhesions, and if they rubbed away, they would say it's not a real adhesion. Obviously, since it rubbed away, it's just rear bi'alma, it was just some type of fluid, and nothing really serious. We also noted that the Ramah himself didn't like it. He acknowledged it, and he said, you can rely on it if there's a big loss of money, but he himself really didn't like it. If you would ask the Ramah, the Posek, for Ashkenazic jury, what he really wanted, he wasn't a fan. But nonetheless, the fact is, it's a minhag Yisrael to a minhag of Ashkenazim that they were mekel. Now, Lemaisa on the Shuk today, in the markets today, everyone tries to be machmir for everybody else when you're talking about chalak, when you're talking about, you know, glot, and you want to sell it, you obviously want to sell it to the widest population. So Sfardim typically make sure that the shechita is up to Ashkenazi standards, and that the if it's a sircha kesidron, then they won't even accept that. And similarly, Ashkenazim, if they want to sell glatz, so they want to try to sell it at a high level. But the OU, did I mention this last week? That the OU has a strange Masara, or an interesting Masara? There's a Masara that the OU has. It's in America. It's an American Masara. I don't know whether in England or in other countries it's also true. But I know in the United States, there's a Masara that the OU relies on, that if there are two to three very thin and easily removed sirchot, the OU will actually call that galat. They'll rub it away and they'll call it galat. Okay, which is very interesting. That means that someone who lives here, who was born here and grew up with Badatz galat, or Rabbanut Mahadrin galat, or Beit Yosef Chalak, something like that, going and eating OU glot might be a lower level of glot. It's possible. It's possible. So that's important to be aware of. I don't know. They have a Masara. Yeah, Ish Mipish. No, not they made it up. It's an Ish Mipish. It's a Masara. It's an Ish Mipish Masara. Another thing, just by the way, one would ask, well, is Rabbanut meat kosher? You know, if it's not galat, is it kosher? The answer is, if for Ashkenazic Jewry, if you have a minhag to be mekel, then yeah, then it's kosher. But if you'd ask, is this something that the Rama really would want, it would seem that the answer is that he would prefer a higher standard.
Is that Oyu Masor accepted by Rav Shech and Rav Belsky as well? Or is
I imagine, yeah, they're like the big poskin there. I imagine. I didn't ask them directly, but I would just imagine they're the ones who answer all the questions, and they run the they make the policy. I would imagine.
You said, according to the remark, that if you've got service for Sidron, then he needs further checking.
Right.
But he doesn't like rubbing away either. So what further checking?
Right, you know, in a chinami, he would say that if you want glatz, then he wouldn't be happy with it. He might say, for example, if you check and the hole is plugged in such a way that it would never become unplugged, then you don't have to rub anything away. Then the hole's basically been plugged. So then that's okay. Then that's okay. As long as you're not doing miuch, the Rama would be happy.
So couldn't the Sfardim then do that for them?
I don't think Sfardim would definitely be happy. If it's Kesidron,
he said, if you've got Sirchas Kesidron, then Sfardim would
say it's fine,
because it's fine, but they know Ashkenazim it's not fine, and they can't rub away like we could, hence they just won't do it. So I'm saying, if there's a way of checking without rubbing away, then maybe they could do that.
I have a feeling Bizman has, in today's market, I think they wouldn't even use that. I think that's my sense. When I spoke to Shochtim, that they claim that they're very machmer when they say glot.
So when the Rama says it needs further checking, he's basically saying that you can't really say.
You can't do miuch, but he's saying that if you see that it's closed up and the lobe is covering it in such a way that it's totally protected, then it's fine. And I think the Rama would be like, say, totally fine. I don't think that would be the d'eved in the Rama's mind. Okay, because you're not doing any miuch over there. Okay. One of the things that the Rama was also concerned about was that, you know, miuch, we're assuming that people are going to do it gently, but people get carried away. The Rama says, and this is also brought down in the notes of Kalim on the Shulchan Aruch, that very often there were people who did it bekoach. In other words, they would do kolef. They would actually peel it off, or they would rub too vigorously. So there the Nosek came, so that's for sure not okay. So people get carried away. That's another reason why my poskim are very worried about this miuch, because who's doing the miuch? Are they doing it gently? It's a very sensitive and delicate operation. Yeah.
As far as in America not relying on OU glot,
if they're doing the miuch on on those 2 to 3. I don't know. It's an interesting question. I don't know. Do a question if they've adopted that Masara. I don't know.
people know about it?
I don't know. I don't know if people know about it even. I don't know. That's a very good question. I don't know.
So, I'm going to say that Miyuch is even David for Sikhot that are in order.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, he doesn't like Miyuch. Okay. Now, what about chicken? What's the story with chicken?
Delicious.
Right. So first of all, you should know that the term glot also, even by chicken, really doesn't make so much sense. Because chicken's lungs are different than cow's lungs in one major way. I mean, many major ways, but really one very blatant, clear way. What's the difference? They don't have lobes. Okay, a chicken's lungs does not have lobes. So you can't have sirchot from ona to ona. You can't have from one lobe to... There are no lobes. Some say that you still should be concerned about sirchot from the chicken's lungs to the chest cavity of the chicken. But sometimes there are adhesions between the chest cavity and the lung itself. But that's not the classic sirchot that's discussed in Shulchan Aruch.
Does that sort of abnormality exist in humans?
I don't know. I'm not sure enough. That'd be interesting. I don't know. But we can, if it did, and then we can start categorizing. This guy's glot kosher. You know, this guy's a glot guy.
Right? Huh? Anatomically, I was told that chicken's lungs are very similar to human
lungs. Oh, to human lungs. Oh, I see. That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know.
So this
sirchot
be caused by just a
we
don't know what it's caused by, right?
Yeah. I've spoken to doctors about it, veterinarians. They really don't know.
Is that word sirchot
in English? Adhesions. That's what we mean. The sroch is to sruchin ahadodi means one's adhering to the other.
I know that like very common people I had also have a collapsed lung. So maybe it's something like that, they have a little hole. And there is some fluid that does come out. I mean, they take it out.
But the fluid hardens and attaches to the lung cavity?
Well, I don't know.
Or to the chest cavity?
I have no idea. I don't know. I mean, it's very common. I have to deal with that. So it could be the same thing.
So anyway, let me just say, with regard to chickens, the following is so. Inasmuch as glot really doesn't exist in chickens, the only other standards really to check are how quickly are they doing shechita, how often are they checking the knives, how well are they doing melicha, things of that nature. How well are they checking the chickens before they shech them? Like, if you ever see the way chickens are transported, Do you ever see like a truck bed of chickens? They're smashed in, like together. And one of the things that would make a chicken treif or treifa is if it has a broken leg. And now the question is how unusual would it be for a chicken to get damaged and hurt en route? So I wouldn't be surprised if many did get hurt, along the way. But maybe they do check, maybe they don't check, but it's important to know that it can walk. Some demand and insist that a chicken first walk, before you shecht it. If it doesn't walk, then it's a bad sign. Yeah.
So they don't actually have to do any x-rays on the chickens.
You don't have to do what?
You don't actually have to do any x-rays on the chickens to make sure that that's a refuge.
Right. Correct. Because when it's transported, things can get broken and... Like, do you ever eat a chicken wing or something like that, and like you see that the bone's already broken? Never. Has that ever happened? You had a chicken where it was broken already? Okay, I mean, I've seen it. So I've spoken to Postcom about this, and they say we assume that it happened in the packaging and in the processing afterwards. I mean, they do a lot of stuff to the chicken after they shecht it. So that's what they said. But it always scares me every time you see something like that. You know. I hope they got it right. In any event, I spoke to Rav Lichtenstein about it, and he told me that with regard to chickens, he did not think that you have to get a mahadrin hechsher. You can eat normal, regular rabbanut chicken, provided, he said to me, that that particular rabbanut is a good rabbanut. They have to be responsible rabbanut. If you know that it's a responsible rabbanut, and I'm not saying I know which ones aren't and which aren't, you know, normally you can assume that they're good. But if you have, if there's a shmua out there that some rabbanut is not super careful, then he said better to avoid it. But otherwise, he said regular rabbanut chicken, he said was fine. So if you wanted to eat chicken, let's say your relatives or friends that invite you out to a restaurant, and it's a rabbanut meat restaurant, and you're normally makbid to eat meat. To eat glatt. But you want to eat meat at this restaurant. So what are you going to do? So you're not going to have steak because it's only rabbanut. It's not glatt. So you can order chicken. You can order the chicken there. And that would solve the problem. Yeah.
What exactly would the rabbiner have to be careful about at the place being burned?
Right, like the speed of the shechita, how often are they checking the knives, are they checking the chickens before they walk, how well is the malicha being done, you know, things of that, like that. An interesting question that's raised, well, what about the kalim? I mean, if you're eating in a rabbanut restaurant, the kalim were used for non glatt meat, and you're makbid only eat glatt. Well, let's say you only eat glatt meat. Can you eat by somebody, by family that only eats, that also eats, rabbanut meat? Aren't the kalim not, the non glatt kalim? What are you going to do?
Is there non glatt kalim, or is there only a kasher situation?
Well, it's bolea. It's bolea the tam. It absorbs the taste. So I want to share with you a very important Ramah. The Ramah is in Yoredea. It's Simen Samach Dalad Se'iftes. In Yoredea, Simen Samach Dalad Se'iftes. And the Ramah describes a type of fat, a chelev, that was in dispute. Some communities viewed it as an Issa Doraisa of chelev, and other communities viewed it as Heter Gomer. And the question arose, let's say you're from the Machmir community, and you are in the Mekel community for a Shabbos or for the day or whatever, can you eat by the people there? Can you eat from the Kalim? You're not going to eat the Chalev, you're Machmir. But can you eat from the Kalim? So the Ramah rules, in your day, Simin Samach Dal, Siftas, he says it's okay. That's what he writes, in the first, explicitly, he writes it's okay. Why? Why is it okay? So he doesn't explain over there, but the Kalim and the Poskim explain as follows. We know that if non-kosher food, let's say, falls into a chalent, let's say some bacon would fall into a chalent. So if you eat the bacon, that would be awesome. You can eat bacon. Let's say you take out the bacon, and there's tam. There's no actual pieces of bacon there, but there's a taste of bacon. What do we say there? Is the taste also an issa d'oraisa, or is it only the actual bacon? So there's a din that's called tam ki ikar. In Yoredea, you learn Yoredea, so one of the central halachos that you learn is called tam ki ikar. Which means the taste is like the thing itself. So, and that's what we're passing. Tam ki ikar is daraisa, that the taste of the bacon is like the bacon itself. It's as if you're eating. It is bacon daraisa. It's bacon. Rav Lichtenstein told me once that when he went to YU, he left. He was originally in Chaim Berlin, and in high school, and then he went to YU for college, and they didn't let him into Rabbi Soloveitchik's shir right away. He was too young. He was very young when he transferred over after college. And so they put him into a shir, and he said the Rebbe was speaking very quickly and not clearly, and they were learning Maseches Pesachim, and he kept referring to Tam Kikar. Pesachim Tam Kikar is a famous sugya, but the Rebbe kept saying Tam Kikar. So Rav Lichtenstein told me, he said I wasn't sure what he was talking about. I didn't hear the words, and he said I thought he meant that on Pesach, where you're not allowed to eat chametz, let's say the time of a kikar, the time of bread, got into your food. And eventually he figured out that it was tam ki ikar. But in any event, tam ki ikar is a very basic din, and a fundamental din. The question that Rishonim struggle with is, what about tam balua bekelim? In other words, let's say we said if bacon falls into your cholent and you take out the bacon, so there's the taste of the bacon in your cholent, that's tamki kedaraisa. But let's say bacon falls into an empty pot, a hot empty pot, and you take out the bacon and you clean out the pot. Do we say that the taste of the bacon got absorbed into the walls of the kli, and now have the power through that absorption into the walls of the kli to trafe up food that would go into the kli subsequently? Do we say that somehow the taste resides in the walls and have this taste of bacon to ruin and trafe up your food? So it's machlokas rishonim. Some rishonim say no. How can you say something like this? If it's absorbed into the walls, so then it's definitely nosin tam lefgam. It's not powerful enough. It can't do anything. And most rishonim argue, and most rishonim say no. We say tam balua bekelim also is matrif. We treat it like also minatara that it has the ability to trafe up food, and that's how we paskin that way. Of course, that's how we paskin. That if meat gets into the milk kalim, or the meat gets into a power of kli, it makes the kli milkix, fleshix. And if treif gets into your kli, so then it makes a treif. That's how we pass it. But poskim say that is it's a machlokas rishonim. We're machmir, but it's still a machlokas rishonim. So let's go back to the case of the chelev case that the Ramah was talking about. You're from a machmir town by chelev. You visit a Mekel town. And you know that it's a machlokas. You're machmir, but you know it's a machlokas. So for you to eat food, let's say the guy cooked mashed potatoes or potatoes in this pot that used to have chelev, that was once used for the chelev. So let's think about it. First of all, maybe really the chelev is mutter. You're machmir, but maybe the din is that it's mutter. And number two, maybe the halacha is like the rishonim that are mekel with tambalu of bekelim. Even though we are machmir, but the fact is there are rishonim who say they're mekel. So this is called a sfeika lakula. There's a sfeika lakula that maybe the food is mutter, and maybe the tambalu of bekelim is also mutter, so we're mekel. So the same thing, if you go to a rabbinate restaurant, the kalim there, even though they may use non-glot meat, and it absorbed into the kalim, but still, it's a sfeika. Maybe non-glot meat is really kosher. And number two, maybe tambalu b'kalim doesn't do anything. Okay, that's the classic explanation. You add to this also, there's a din called, stam kalim enim b'nei yomim, which means that typically if you don't know whether a kli has been used or not recently, we assume it hasn't been used for the last 24 hours. If it hasn't been used for the last 24 hours, then what's the status of the taste inside the walls? Even in the worst case scenario, it's called no same tam lifgam, that the taste has gone south. The taste is spoiled and can't doesn't have the same power to trip up. Einam b'nei yoma. Einam b'nei yoma. Those are not considered a ben yoma. They're not considered from that day. Now, let's say, yeah.
The same place called Israel.
Same thing with Kalim? Yeah, yeah.
It's Kalim. Yeah, and might it said Hakabilos Kozlu?
Let me just
start.
It's
going to
mention the problem.
Sorry. What was the question?
Might it said Hakabilos in this instance be Los Kozlu? I can have to create different factions or groups.
Interesting. I mean, it's a sniff to start, just to meet ma'ache people that everyone should be doing sort of the same thing. And, it's interesting. But those goals usually is in the positive. When people do something, they end
right,
up
so
here it's refraining.
Prevention.
Yeah. It's usually, you don't really find those goals so much by not doing something.
Hey, but it could still be like in possible reason.
Yeah. Possible. But it's not the standard, svar. Yeah.
But do you have stam kelim b'nei yoma? Does that mean that you don't have to hechsher a pot that a piece of meat under the milk? You just have to wait there?
So in principle that's the halacha, but lemaisa it's not. Because we're machmir. The Shulchan Aruch, you know, poskim are machmir. The Shulchan Aruch is machmir in the end. But really, it's not in the b'dieved. If it was done, the food would be kosher. Okay, like I'll give you an example. If a milchik ladle, okay, goes into a, let's say you have a fleishik pot, and you have meat in the fleishik pot, okay, like you have a meat soup, and someone puts a milchik ladle into the soup pot, okay, but the milchik ladle hasn't been used for 24 hours. Are you allowed to do that on purpose? No, but if it was done. The soup is kosher, the soup pot is kosher, and the ladle has to be koshered, which is really unbelievable. That's remarkably the din. Yeah.
Does it make a difference if the food is used for hot food or cold food? For the, like, for instance, if the ladle was in the soup while it was being cooked, as opposed to if it was a cold soup and just dipped in there.
If it's a cold soup, then there's no expulsion of taste.
It's only
about heat. You need heat to generate bli and plito.
This is the same. This is stemming from the concept of imrad in the
suvakilo. Right. You can't. I mean, but it's related to it. Imavat list of the chatchila is a little bit different because there you're talking about genuine tarfas. Nos tamif gam means already it's not tarf.
The issue is the tarf. Is it just a potential to
a shear for time is 1 in 60. It's 1 in 60. It's bata b'shishim. Usually, not always, but usually.
I thought bata b'tam is different.
Usually, okay. not always, but let's say most of the time we say that. But there are certain things that are called milsa davidi l'taima, which are very powerful tastes that defy that. It's a good question. Mahadrin meat. My sense is it's the same.
If you get to like a meat restaurant
and it says mahadrin, then it should be it should mean that the meat is also, unless they're really being devious, it should mean the same thing. I would ask does that mean, but it should mean it.
And if it's not mahadrin, then there's no chance it's
not meat. No, if it's not, sometimes what you find in a rabbinate restaurant is that they'll have glatt kosher meat. They sometimes actually have glatt kosher meat. If they have glatt kosher meat, then I think it's okay to use it. If you can check or really believe them, then it's okay. Yeah.
I was in a restaurant in Yerushalayim, and I wasn't sure about the kashrut. It was 15 shekels for shawarma, but that's like heavy shady. So I looked at the hashgacha and said it was mahadrin mina mahadrin. Is there any validity to that, or is that just them coming up with a title?
It's a title they stole from Gemara Shabbos and Daf Chaf Gimel. Yeah.
I think it's actually.
Mahadrin mina mahadrin. I mean, they should. He said it's treif.
Not kosher. It's treif, not kosher. I'm pretty sure
it says treif, not kosher. There's a tzuda that says mahadrin mina mahadrin.
Yeah, it says it on the tzuda.
Uh-huh. But it can't be.
It says on the tzuda mahadrin mina mahadrin.
Is it? Does it have a rabbanut hechsher?
Oh, they want to. It looked like it, when I saw it, okay.
It may not even be. Okay. 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 I like to see it. Yeah. The wonders of technology. Yeah. Oh, there we go. But this is Rabbanan of Ashir, Hamartza Datit. How do you zoom in on this?
Press center button.
But this is an actual Rabbanan certificate.
This?
You think it's forged?
Yeah,
it just says
you can do wonders on paint these days.
I still have to check. I was like, that is a new way.
But it doesn't say that it's glatt. It's just regular. It's regular rabbanut. This is. Are you sure this is the one?
Yeah. Well, that was a 50 place.
Really? Because this is an actual Rabbanut Hechsher.
It's
a Rabbanut Harashit Tzuzah.
Not be forged.
And it doesn't say Mahadron on it. It's just like regular. I don't know. It means that the walls, it means that the pot was not used in the last 24 hours, and therefore any taste that was in it is no sintam of gam. And if it was used, not that you're supposed, you're not allowed to use it l'chatchila, but if it was used, it's not going to ruin. If the pot was cooked in, you know, let's say by accident someone cooked milchiks in an ena ben yom pot. That was meat. You're not allowed to do it, but if you did it, the food would not be trash. Okay.
Wait, what was the result of that?
I don't know. I don't know if that is the tuda, and shawarma is like turkey meat. Is this talking about turkey meat or meat or meat meat? If it's turkey, if it's turkey and that tuda, if I saw that tuda, and from what I'm looking at, it's a regular rabbanut tuda.
Same much.
For a lamb, then it needs to be glot. It's not glot. That was the time glot. Yeah. It's meat. I mean, unless you
hold. If you hold
right. If you don't eat glot, then.
You can eat the chicken shawarma.
Yeah.
Old fake faker. Is that only Eina Ben Yoma?
This fake faker. No, that's with even after Eina Ben Yoma. I'm just throwing on. There's an added reason to make because of Eina Ben Yoma.
And if you did cook milk in a meat pot, would the pot be?
The pot would have to be kosher.
But the food's fine.
Right. You know, if you cook the milk in a meat pot, there was ain't a binyoma, the food would be kosher, but the pot has to be kosher.
Okay.
Now, let's say you go visit someone's home for Shabbos or during the week, and you know that they happen to they eat non-glot meat, and you eat, let's say you're makbid on glot. Can you eat the food? In other words, let's say they actually are serving meat to you, and you don't know, but you know that they eat non-glot. What's the deal? So really, technically, the din is as follows. This is a din that's brought down by Rav Avad Yosef, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, also passing this way. Rav Luchenstein told me this din as well. He said that if you don't know what food they're serving you, but these people are from people, the Shomer Shabbos, the Shomer Torah Mitzvos, the good Jews, they eat non-glot. So there's an assumption that the Baal Habayis, the people who are being Machnis Oreach, the assumption is that they are serving the highest level of kashrus to you. Because that's part of the Derech Eretz. That's part of the culture of taking care of your guests. If they don't ask you, is there anything that you're makbid about, or are you worried about certain things, then you can assume that they're taking care of you, full service. And the onus, the burden, is on them. And if they serve you less than your standard, and they didn't ask you, then they're the ones that are responsible, and not you. That's typically so. The assumption is that typically you being served food, you serve kosher food. That's the Rama even quotes that also in, like, when he talks about Chol of Yisrael and Chol of Stam and things like that. The Rama says, can it be that that a Jew would serve another Jew food that the other Jew wouldn't eat? It can't be.
If you have like friends or family that
I'll tell you a story in a second. One second, I'm going to tell you a story. This is the Ramo that I just quoted to you is in Yoredea. Simon Kuf Yud Tes Sif Zayin. I'm going to read it to you. Okay, again, it's in Yoredea. Simon Kuf Yud Tes Sif Zayin. The Ramo writes, Misha Noheg Be'ezidavar Isu. Okay, let's say you have a minhag to not eat something. Okay, you're machmir. Mikoach shesover shedina hu hachi, because you really think that that's the din. Oh, mikoach chumra shehichmira atzma, or because you know that's not really the din, but you machmir. Mutar le'echol im acherim shenogim bo heter. You can eat by other people who are mekel. Why? Devadai lo yachiluhu davar shehu noeg bo iser. Because for sure they're not going to feed you something that you're machmir for. Okay, that's what the Rama writes. So there's an assumption that the Jews are careful about the people that they're hosting, that they're going to make sure to take care of them. So I'll tell you Maisa Shahayim. Shows, you know, the minog of Chazal, minog of Poskim is a true minog. A number of years ago, my wife and I were, and our kids, were invited out to someone's home for a Shabbos meal in Yerushalayim. And I knew the people, they're very good people. But they're not, I wouldn't call them medaktikim in any sense. They're very easygoing people. You know, not always so super careful about things, but they were good Jews, and they're certainly Shomer Torah mitzvos. People. And I knew that they ate non-glot meat. And lo and behold, for Shabbos meal, you know, of course, they bring out an amazing cholent, loaded with good meat in there, and it just looked great. You know, sometimes you see this cholent, like, it's just amazing. It smelled unbelievable, loaded with meat. Also, they brought out cold cuts, the best cuts of meat. It was unbelievable. I was really, really hungry, you know, and the smell was like killing me. But I said to myself at the time, this was years ago, I said to myself, I know they're not, they usually eat non-glut. So I'll eat something else. I'll have the rice, I'll have the salad, I'll have the chicken, I'll have other things. I'll miss that there. I'll have the kugel. And that's what I did. And then a couple of years later, I bumped into them, and I was just schmoozing, and the topic, they didn't know that I had been machmir. I had filled up my plate plenty. There was no worry about that. A couple of years later, I bumped into them, and the topic of kashrus came up, and it came out when we started speaking to them. They said, "Oh yeah, you know, we don't eat glot. We're not machmir glot, but whenever we have guests over, we always serve glot all the time." And they said, because maybe they're machmir, so we have to be extra careful. So I said, "Can you bite us over again soon?" We're in town, you know. This is the way good Jews behave, and that's the assumption that people are good Jews and they're going to take care of the guests properly.
Did you get the invite?
Huh?
Did you get the invite?
I was just kidding. I didn't know. We've eaten them by them subsequently. We have. Yeah.
But it still seems to be, if you do it appropriately, if you do it respectfully, to ask beforehand.
It's very tough. If you could do that and not insult them, fine. Rav Luchenstein said to me, on this halacha, he said, listen, he was saying, if I eat the food, he said, the probability is that they're serving me good food. I mean, that should be my assumption. Or it's a chumra, you know, it's machlokes here. He said, but if I insult them, I'm going to violate an issur d'oraisa.
So if you can do it in a respectful way, you can do it in a way that...
It's tricky. If you can do it, it's fine. We got to be really, you know, just like we're nizar in what we you know, put into our mouths, we have to be very careful about how to be right. If it can be done, granted.
Also, this restaurant is owned and run by Shomer Shabbos and the place, the manufacturer of whatever he's getting for his restaurant, they're also, everyone is Shomer Shabbos in the picture. Why would you then need a hashkafa? Because just like you rely on this family, this Baal HaBos, because he's Shomer Torah Mitzvos, so shouldn't you also rely on the...
It's a good question. The difference is that there's no Geir B'davar, because they're running a business. We say the normal dinner, like Erech HaNem and Bisurin, like one of the basic halachas of kashrus, of eating eating by other Jews is that we say one aid is Naaman when it comes to Issa v'Heter. It's the first Amud. I'm sure you guys learned it maybe in Bekias and in Gittin, Daf Bezim and Aleph. So we say Eidacha Naaman b'Yisurin, but not when he's no Geah, not when he's a prophet to make. That's the exception. Yeah.
You said that in the case where you eat at someone else's house who isn't Bat, that they have to know that you don't eat Bat, or do you even just assume?
You can assume that they would have asked you. As if they were serving less than the standard,
also,
they would have asked you. Since they didn't ask you, clearly they're serving you the higher standard.
Okay, even if they have no reason to think that you only eat Bat.
Right, but people who are good Jews, you know, it's common courtesy. It's okay. Common courtesy. Now, so I once put the question to Rav Lichtenstein. Let's say you know that they're serving you non-glot meat, but then, if you're machped only to eat glot, and you know for a fact that it's non-glot meat, like you went into the kitchen to help out and you saw the packaging, and it was non-glot meat. What to do then? So Rav Lichtenstein said, then you got to be machped. Then you can't do it. So I said, let's say it's going to close the busha, you know, and you can't get it. You know, he said, try to do whatever you can. Eat the salad, eat the rice. But I said, let's say it's really going to mivayish them. So he said to me, even so, he really thought that you're not allowed to eat the non-glot meat unless, he said, you're matir neder. If you could somehow be matir neder, then it's okay. But otherwise, you wouldn't be able to do it. He was very, very hesitant about it.
So if you're there with four friends, you could like assume three of them are basting right away.
Right, in matir neder. Yeah. If you can do that, if you'd have to.
Do
my Tarsen Darm quickly says, yeah, we gotta excuse ourselves and.
Huh? Let's do the Lumafreya.
You mean do it after Shant with Lumafreya? Yeah. I don't know if that really works, or we could do like that. Right, no, you have to just like say, you know, we forgot something downstairs or something. I don't know. Okay. All right. So that's any other questions with regard to Blatt? Yeah. That's a great question. There is a debate about precisely this issue. Now, let's say you come from a community, like in the United States. I know this is true. In England, is it also assumed everyone is eating glot? Yeah. That from Jews, no? There are different standards? Huh? Also? New York, New Jersey. Really? Okay, so let's say like this. Let's start with a question. If a person comes from a community, okay, let's say New York, New Jersey, where the meat that's only really available at a kosher butcher, you know, so if you go to a kosher butcher, the only meat that's available is glot meat. So Rav Lichtenstein said that then you basically assume the minhag. You've taken on the minhag. Rav Avadi Yosef doesn't agree with that. He doesn't seem to agree with that. I have to double check, but I may have seen also Rosh Shlomo Zalman also not taking that approach, but that you'd actually have to mekabel the minhag. So that is a bit of a debate. That's a good question.
Could you be
matir neder al-tanai? Al-tanai, that what?
Al-tanai, if somebody serves you, you know, non-glot meat, and you'll embarrass them.
Oh, in such a case, I see. Then you're going to be mako. Yeah, I think that should be good. I don't think so. Okay. Any other questions on glot? Okay, so we'll begin the topic of Chol Yisrael. So, first of all, I'm sure you know that the term Chol Yisrael doesn't exist in Mishnayos or Gemara, that term is not there. What does exist is something called Chalav Akum. Chalav Akum refers to milk that was milked from a cow without a Jew supervising the process. Okay, it was an unsupervised milking of the cow. Okay, that's called Chalav Akum. And there's an issur drabanan, as we'll soon see. I'll go into the makaros with you very shortly. There's an issur drabanan to consume such milk in that situation, at least in principle. That's the din. Okay, the term Chalav Yisrael is a modern term that is used today to describe supervised milk. The milk that you would find, let's say, in a supermarket today, that in a place where it's not a third world country, but there really is government legislation and there's government oversight of milking facilities. So that milk is called by many Chalav Stam. Okay, so it's sort of in the middle. There's Chalav Akum, there's Chalav Stam, and Chalav Yisrael. The question is Chalav Stam really Chalav Akum? Or is Chalav Stam just as mutter as Chalav Yisrael? Or is it just, you know, is it the Dievet? Okay, we'll get into that. But that's just in terms of understanding the terminology. So, the makor for all this is in the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hey Amud Beis. And this is what the Mishnah says. It's Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hey Amud Beis. Ve'elu Devarim Shel Akum Asurim. The following things that come from that are processed by non-Jews in terms of food are prohibited to be eaten. Vein isuron isur hanon. The isur that we're talking about, says the Mishnah, is not an isur of benefiting, but it's an isur achila. Cholov, what's one case? Cholov shecholvo avodah zarah, meaning a nachri. Nachri milked the cow. Vein yisrael ra'o. And no Jew saw the milking. So there's an isur drabanon to consume the milk. There's no isur hanon. Okay, but there's an isur achila. Okay, you can give the milk to your dog. You can sell the milk. There's no isur hanah, but you can't eat it. Now, why is it asur? So, just some background information, which you probably know, but just there's a Mishnah in Bechoros in Daf Hei Amud Beis that says as follows. It's again a Mishnah in Bechoros Daf Hei Amud Beis. It says Hayotzim in Hatameh Tameh v'Hayotzim in Hatar Hatar. Anything that comes out of a non-kosher animal is not kosher, and anything that comes out of a kosher animal is kosher. So the Gemara in Bechoros, Daf Zayin Amud Aleph and Daf Zayin Amud Beis says that includes milk. So milk that comes out of a cow, presumably, unless the cow is known to be a trefa, but otherwise we assume the milk should basically be kosher. Milk that comes out of a pig, or milk that comes out of a horse, or milk that comes out of a camel, that milk is non-kosher. Because it's a behemoth tamea, so the milk is also considered not kosher. And that's the psak of the Rambam, that's the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, that's how we pass it. Okay, now given all that, so what's the problem with unsupervised milk? So the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hey, Amud Beis, that we're concerned that the non-Jew, since he milked it in an unsupervised fashion, were worried that he added pig's milk or camel's milk, or horse's milk. He added milk from a behemoth to man. That's what we're concerned about. So I just want to, does everyone understand that? Does it make sense? It makes sense. So I want to introduce a question. We'll leave some drama for the next year. The Gemara does establish in Avodah Zarah and Lamed Hei Amud Beis that milk from a behemoth tameah actually has a yellowish tinge. If it comes from a non-kosher animal like pig, horse, camel, the milk is a little bit more yellowish. So let's think for a minute. If they added a lot of milk so it can't be batel, then you should see just by looking at it that it's a little on the yellow side. So you would know that they added. And if they added so little that you can't tell, then what should be the din? So what's the problem? We'll stop shir here. Okay? And we'll have to deal with that next week. Okay? Erev Tov.